What about the fraud story in the United States? And in a year,
in a time,
in a year when Wall Street has just copped the absolute mother of all hidings, how about this $50 to $70 billion scam? A pyramid scheme. A pyramid scheme to cap it all off. Financial commentator Stephen Mayne, a very good morning to you, Mayne.
Morning, Coxie. You wouldn't see something like this in Zimbabwe, mate. It's incredible.
Well, it's a cup of tea in Zimbabwe, but, I mean, how has this happened? How has this got past the regulators?
Well, this guy was so close to the regulators, they basically gave him a green light in the end. He was the chairman of the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. He was a special advisor to the Securities and Exchange Commission. He was a big political donor. His niece was married to the SEC investigator who looked at his books back in 2003. So the classic case of someone who got so close to his control and regulators that he learnt the system and then he just managed to completely fraud the system over a long period.
But was it really, as it's been portrayed, a pyramid scheme, or is that an oversimplification?
No, it was absolutely a pyramid scheme. It was the world's biggest pyramid scheme. There was $75 billion Australian dollars has come in and gone out, and there's nothing left. And those who were in early got most of their money back, and those who came in late have lost a lot. It was a classic pyramid scheme, which you'd see pop up in dodgy circles all over the place all the time.
So can you explain for us just how it worked, how this bloke's managed to come into so much cash?
Well, he started off in 1960. He was mainly a middleman, a broker-dealer. And then quite a few years ago, he got into the investment side of things. He was able to cover his tracks because he was his own dealer, so he did all his own trading. And basically, he ran it like an exclusive club where he built up an aura around his membership. So he would often knock people back and say, no, I'm not going to let you come in. I don't want you in. So he got that exclusivity feel about it. And then because he delivered steady returns of 10 to 12% a year, year on year, no matter what happened, people loved him because money always makes the best returns, provided there isn't, too much risk. And guys seem to have all the credibility, seem to take minimal risk, reliable returns. And then he just used his networks all over the world, and the money poured in.
It just beggars belief that it could go on to that extent. Any idea how many people have been affected by this, and how many institutional investors have been affected by it?
Oh, look, it's many hundreds. I mean, most of the big banks, ironically, none of the big US banks are in there, but HSBC, Santander, the big Spanish bank, is in there for $5 billion. They're the biggest loser, and once again, he had social connections to the chairman of Santander and these sort of things. It was very much a social, sort of an elite aristocracy circles. All the elite in New York, a lot of the charities and the New York University and the philanthropic groups, they met this guy at the clubs. They heard from others that he was good and reliable, and it just snowballed from there. But the list of victims is staggering. National Paddy, the biggest French bank, 600 million. Nomura, the biggest Japanese stockbroking firm, a billion. Royal Bank of Scotland, now owned by the British government, a billion. So it's just phenomenal.
Is there anything in place to ensure that nothing along these lines happens in Australia?
Well, most money in Australia, if it's superannuation money, it must the investment firm must have a separate custody firm and actually is the custodian for the cash. This guy ran his own custodian firm. In Australia, you've got to have an Australian Financial Services licence from ASIC. You get regulated by APRA. You've got to have a proper auditor. So because Australia has compulsory super, we actually do have a fairly heavily regulated super system. I can't see it happening in Australia. I think this is a one-off. The US is the home of deregulation and let the capital markets flow.
Yeah.
Clearly the whole system's collapsed, and now clearly as part of that collapse, we've now had a giant fraud also exposed. So the Americans had the least rules of anyone. It's now shown to be a disaster, and I think you'll see a massive increase in rules and regulation going forward.
Last time we spoke was about Qantas and British Airways. Qantas is back in the news today with a different possible partner. Is there no end to just how, well, how loose the old girl is getting, do you think, Stephen?
Oh, I think she should just settle down, don't you? I mean, she makes a lot of money. She's very popular in her home country. There's a lot of dance partners over here in terms of customers. 60% of the market, world's most profitable airline. Why do they want to keep on having these celebrity marriage partners from around the world? I mean, they are the star in Australia. They are the stunner in Australia, and they should just stay here and be happy and make their profits here.
Yes. Well, so what would be driving it, do you think? And it's into its second management team endeavouring to do it now.
Well, the argument goes that you got to get big or get out, that with oil prices and just the general economic crisis, that the small will fail and only the big will survive. So, and corporates, the natural habitat of a corporate is to take over your competitors and be the biggest in the block. And you see it with BHP trying to take over Rio Tinto. You see it with Woolworths always trying to take over everyone. Westfield trying to take over everyone. Telstra going bananas at the suggestion that they be structurally separated. So companies just love dominating. At the end of the day, it's part of their genetic makeup, and taking over your rivals and being top of the heap is something that drives the egos of a lot of CEOs. So I think Qantas is caught up in that game, and frankly, they should just stop it and settle down to being the dominant Australian airline.
Yes, get a courtesan and keep it quiet. Just very quickly, Telstra's been left out of the broadband expansion. Is that a good look or a bad look for Telstra and also, I guess, for Minister Conroy?
Well, look, I think it's more damaging for Telstra. The share price is down $8 or $9 billion now since the decision. It's been a disaster for shareholders. Even the government stake's fallen by well over $1 billion now in Telstra. And Telstra's been playing silly games, not complying with the process. So I think Donald McGauchie is the chairman, an old Liberal sort of mate, the head-kicking former head of the National Farmers Federation during the waterfront dispute. This whole argument about always being at war with the government, I think it backfired spectacularly for Telstra. And Sol Trujillo and Donald McGauchie are both coming towards the end of their terms, and I think you'll see their successors will have a less aggressive posture when it comes to the regulator and the government.
Good on you, mate. Thank you so much for that, taking all those questions without notice, and I'm sure we'll be catching up plenty in the new year. All the best.
Thanks, Coxie.
Finance commentator Stephen Mayne on 936 ABC Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.